You guys, thank you for being patient and awesome and fabulous. This episode was supposed to come out last week, and then I dropped my fucking computer in a parking lot. So I had to send it into the Apple store and had like a mini freak out, and I had no way of sending anything out.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have my computer. So here's the episode.
Sorry, guys. Welcome to SVU Pod, Especially Heinous. I'm Gabe.
I'm Tasha.
We are on season 6, episode 17, Rage.
Oh, so if you guys have heard her name, I'm sure Alyssa takes our notes and then we have them as kind of an outline for taking our notes then. And it's efficient and wonderful. And she does a great job. And sometimes she writes in funny things and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she usually will attach an email of her thoughts when she sends us the notes. But I wanted to tell you this one. She said, hey, notes for episode 17 are attached. This was shot differently. You can tell they were trying new stuff this season. Not sure if I liked the beginning or not, but I did like how Benson backed up Stabler in the end, even though he was annoying most of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
My husband got home a little tipsy after the game today,
mm-hmm.
and I was working on this episode. He said, that's Papa, and then walked away without another word, laid down and took a little drunky nap. Then it dawned on me that the perp in the episode is Matthew Modine. Duh. Have a great week, Alyssa. So the main dude, like
Rickett, or whatever his name is,
the opposite of Stabler. Yes, it's Matthew Modine. He was in Any Given Sunday, a bunch of episodes of Weeds, Too Big to Fail, The Dark Knight Rises. But he's Dr. Brenner, a.k.a. Papa, in Stranger Things. But he was also in Oppenheimer most recently, which is a big deal. But for me, I saw him and I went, holy fucking shit. And I had to go back because he looks so different as he's aged, but he was Private Joker in Full Metal Jacket.
Oh. Yeah, I knew him from things, but I couldn't place him. Oh my God, he has changed a lot.
Yeah, I mean, obviously
it's just normal.
Full Metal Jacket.
I mean, now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was like the glasses, like the military issued glasses,
mm-hmm.
they really change
a face.
A person's face. Also, so does like 30 years.
You grow a beard and I wouldn't know who you were. You know what I mean? I can't.
Yeah, if you changed your shirt, I'm like, we've never met.
You're like, eBay? Is that you?
But so as soon as I saw the email from Alyssa, I was like, oh, this is going to be fucking good.
Mm-hmm. So the opening scene, there's a dude narrating. He's saying shit like, every cop has weakness. You just got to exploit it, blah, blah, blah. And this is happening while Stabler is setting up an interview room. He's like loosening the little screw foot of a chair, turning up the heat, making a light bulb flicker.
He's just making it uncomfortable in there.
Yeah. So the narrator guy talks about the FBI officers used to be compared to gangsters with badges and says Stabler is like them big time.
So this guy is narrating over Stabler doing all this stuff.
Right.
Cut to the narrator and it's a dude in a holding cell.
He's talking to another guy that's also in the cell and he's got his hood up and the guy's like, who's Stabler? Right away, we're like, this is Toots.
The guy in the hood is very obviously Toots. He's like, oh, you know Stabler?
And it's like, you can't see, it's just like this hood up. Yeah.
Yeah. Like he's on this season of Traitors or some shit.
Right. He's like, who's Stabler? And the narrator guy says, a jarhead detective. So he knows Stabler and thinks Stabler has been thinking of him for a while. The other guy, the hooded Toots, not Toots, the upside down Toots or whatever.
Tether Toots.
Yeah. The upside down Toots sitting in the cell with the hood up asks him how to talk to Stabler. It's like, how do I fucking deal with him? The narrator guy says, the truth will set you free. So Munch comes over and opens up the cell. Narrator dude fucking kicks rocks, is taken to an interview room, and then he like whistles on his way out. Then it cuts to fucking hooded guy, and he looks over and it's like, he's like, I was Toots.
Guys, we tricked him.
It had nothing to do with anything. We tricked him into just saying stuff that he already knew about Stabler. He didn't even say anything. It had nothing to do with anything.
He didn't admit anything. It was no.
He didn't like give up any hot tips or
crazy breakthrough.
Alyssa was right. They were really trying to do something with this episode.
They were.
And they
did.
I think it's fine.
I do like, though, cinematically, I don't know.
Yeah.
I like that the perp was narrating while Stabler was doing this thing that we don't get to see the pre-interview stuff that they do, like the pre-interrogation stuff. They do things to make you uncomfortable. You know,
yeah, do
or two. They do like turn down the heat, turn up the heat, just make it an uncomfortable situation. If you're uncomfortable, you're eventually going to get psychologically uncomfortable and all that stuff.
Right.
Neither hide nor hair of fucking Huang this episode, which.
Yeah. Ooh.
It's kind of his bag, but okay.
In the interview room, this guy's name is Gordon Rickett. And he sits on the chair and it wobbles and you can kind of tell he like knows what's up. Munch is being really annoying this whole fucking scene. He just asks him if he's okay, if he has anything to drink and starts he's like making small talk, trying to psych him out kind of. And I don't know. It was weird.
I liked it.
Yeah. He's like, do you need anything? We're going to be here for a while. It kind of seems like Rickett knows they mess with stuff because the light's flickering in his chair and he kind of looks around and he's like, I know this shit. They're trying to exploit my weakness. Well, I'm going to do it too or whatever. Munch talks a bunch while he opens the paper. He finds a personal ad from a dude that wants to watch another dude bone his wife. And Munch is like, oh, you saw perfect for it. Munch wonders why Rickett came back to New York from California.
Can I pause? In the regular old paper in the mid-aughts, 2006, there's just a, not even like a well-worded ad. Hey, anybody down to fuck my wife? I like to watch. It's in the cuck section of the classifieds. Yeah. Like, they just fucking, that's not in the regular paper.
It's like cars, cats, cucks. Mm. You know what I
mean? You just alphabetized those in your head.
I did. I had to just take a moment for a second.
Cars, cats, cucks.
Yeah, so Munch wonders why Rickett came back to New York from California. And Munch just keeps asking questions. And Rickett's finally like, I don't want to fucking talk. Mm-hmm. Benson comes in. She has some boxes with case files. The name Dana McNamara and the word solved are on the boxes. It's just really kind of obvious.
Yeah.
Stabler's going to be in soon. Munch keeps talking and asks Rickett if he wants something to eat. He's like, I'm fucking fine. Shut up. Munch leaves. Benson sits down and she just kind of stares at him over these boxes. And the lights are flashing. And Rickett's like, when are we going to fucking start? She says they're waiting for Stabler. Your partner is Detective Stabler, he says. Want my advice? Get yourself a new partner. I'm surprised Benson was like, no. No. Rickett says that he can't believe Stabler still works for the NYPD unless he's on medication or something. And he calls Stabler a whack job with a total lack of control, like an animal. And I'm like, yeah. I mean, he should not have a job.
You haven't missed yet.
Yeah. Rickett gets up and goes to the two-way glass and talks to it like Stabler's behind it. He's like, I know what you fucking people do. Blah, blah. Benson tells him that nobody's fucking listening. And then she opens the door and is like, do you want to come check? And he's like, no, I'm fine.
She's like, come through and look. There's nobody on the other side of the glass.
But Stabler and Cragen actually are watching from behind the glass in Stabler's Barbie dream house, where minutes earlier they were trying on each other's swimsuits and getting ready for a day on the beach with Can. Cragen's pigtails are so cute. Okay. Have we done a Barbie dream house?
When I wake up in my own pink world, I go to interrogate a guy and bust his face, but I don't write that part down.
And I unplug the cameras.
I'm gonna lie and tell him I have evidence, but I don't. Toaster! Cool! You've done Barbie's dream house.
I have? I have nothing.
I remember talking about Huang being in the closet with Barbie trying on a spacesuit or something. But you're right, his pigtails are cute.
Okay. Stabler knew that Rickett wouldn't check. He wouldn't want to risk looking stupid. And Cragen was like, I wish she wouldn't do that. So Stabler and Cragen go over Rickett's former case, how he, quote, lucked out and avoided going to prison because the jury failed to convict him. Cragen says Rickett might luck out again because they don't have shit on him. No forensics, no weapon, no crime scene. And they have no idea how he transported the body to the dump. Mm. So Rickett was arrested 3 hours ago. Stabler has 21 more hours to find something to use against him before he walks. When Stabler arrested Rickett, he was packing his apartment, probably to skip town and get away with another crime. Stabler's not going to let that happen again. Cragen says that Rickett really wants him in the interrogation room, but Stabler wants to make Rickett beg for it. Theme song, which he doesn't. He just goes in.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was super weird.
This just kicks off an episode of stuff we're definitely not cool with in real life, but these are pretend cops that we are on the side of. So,
right.
Just throwing that out there where it's like, he did something illegal. In real life, we don't like that.
Yeah. So it's later in the day or night, and they're doing a countdown till he's released. Mm-hmm. Back in the interrogation room, Rickett tells Benson that they are harassing him. He never touched the girl. and tells her that they can't bring up the case of Dana McNamara again because it's been 14 years and he was found not guilty. And then Benson tells him that he's not there for Dana's case. He asks what the boxes with Dana's solved files is for. Benson says that when the interview begins, he will be answering their questions, not the other way around. He's fucking pissed that they're bringing up the old case. Benson says that all of that shit was before her time. And he's like, oh yeah, you never heard about it? Then why even bring it up? He takes his jacket off and sits back down. He wants to start the interview. He got up and like took his jacket off and I got a little nervous. I was like, is he gonna fucking lunge? And why isn't he handcuffed? Okay. Well, because it's an interview room. Okay. Benson asks him why he left California. And he was like, I didn't like it. It was too hot. And they keep asking him that. And he keeps saying it was too hot. She wants to know about Dana McNamara and he refuses to talk about it, calling it a, quote, frame job. He's not stupid. And Benson says, nobody's calling you stupid. In fact, I think it was Stabler's mistake 14 years ago, not respecting your intelligence the first time around.
Ooh.
Benson goes and says that Dana was 11. She was last seen January 10th, 1991. She was seen walking up the street with him. She lived in the apartment above the bar he ran. Miss Saragino, his fiance at the time, said that Rickett was prone to violent outbursts, made her wear pigtails to make her look younger during sex, and he often fucking hit her.
Oh my God.
Dana was found a week after she went missing in a drainage ditch. She had been sexually assaulted, strangled, and her hands and feet were tied up. She was beaten and then mutilated after she died. He took a knife and carved out her chest. And then Rickett just keeps saying that he's innocent.
Oh my God. This guy really graphic, this description.
I know. Benson asks him what kind of man he is. Is he an animal? A man with no control? Is he the Stabler in this situation? He tells her to shut up and goes to the window and starts taking deep breaths, controlling his rage. And and then he whistles again and turns back and winks at Benson. Ugh.
He was like whistling a tune as if that's the tool he uses to calm himself, which all I could imagine was him being full of rage, attacking a child and like whistling during it.
Oof.
There's
yuck.
It's like that's right up there with creepy kid singing nursery rhyme horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Murderer wearing a blank mask or clown makeup. Like that kind of shit.
Yeah. Oh, then Stabler just walks in. There was no begging for him. It was weird. And then Rickett's like, oh, there he is, the shining star of the New York Police Department. You miss me, you old bastard. You know I missed you. He's like so pumped. Stabler ignores him and shows him a picture of a little 12-year-old girl, Carrie Lynn Palmer, that was found in the Hudson River a week ago. The same things that happened to her happened to Dana, raped, bound, mutilated. She was dumped an hour before she was discovered, and Stabler says, I bet the killer wasn't counting on that. Now we can start. And then Stabler smiles, and then the fucking lights blink.
Here we go.
These are long scenes, but it's good. I think it's good.
It is good. And one of the other things they're doing differently, first of all, the cast list was tiny because there's not as many people. And the whole episode, well, the whole maybe first three quarters of the episode is basically 12 Angry Men style, like just one room.
Yeah.
Stabler's sitting across from Rickett at the table while Benny's doing some shit in the room. She's just in there, but the two guys are talking. Rickett says he doesn't want a lawyer, which Stabler calls stupid and asks him again why he left California. Rickett again says it's because it was hot. And I'm like, California is
it's not
the entire West Coast of the U.S., but nobody's asking me. But have you ever been to San Francisco? It's not that hot. Okay.
Yeah.
Benny and Stabes bounce back and forth asking a bunch of questions now that are obviously made to poke at Rickett's ego. When Benson asks what his job is, he says he works with hazardous materials, but Stabler clarifies that he actually disposes of hazardous materials. He's a garbage man, which is actually a really well-paying gig, but again, they're poking at his ego.
Yeah.
He owned a family bar, but he sold it. Stabler asks how he got to California. He took a bus. Stabler flips a chalkboard to reveal a map of the United States. There's a little red pin in Southern California, New York, Nevada, and Arizona. Stabler asks him if he lived in either of those other places in between New York and California. And Rickety Cricket does not answer. I had a really hard time not calling him Rickety Cricket the whole time.
That's the best character arc from It's Always Sunny.
Stabes repeats again, why'd you leave California? They've now asked him thrice and he's getting moody.
Munch did too a couple times. It was just annoying.
He says he came back because his aunt died and he needed to take care of some things. Stabler, who's In this episode, Christopher Maloney, acting as Stabler, acting as a cop who wants the perp to know he's pretending to give a shit but really doesn't, says, "That's very decent of you, Gordon. Sorry for your loss." And Rickett's like, "No, you're not. You're laughing at me." Mm-hmm. He accuses Stabler of trying to wreck his life. And Stabler's like, "Little old me?" And then he's all of a sudden standing there pigeon-toed, wearing a cloth diaper and bonnet while licking a giant swirly lollipop.
He's like, "I'm just a baby.
How could I ruin your life? I'm just a little baby. I don't even have any money. I don't have pockets." Stabler crawls on Rickett's lap and asks him if he's hungry. I'm sitting here trying to pick apart the psychology of absolutely everything they're doing right now, because Stabler's, you know, he's like, "Oh, are you hungry? Do you want something to eat?" The way that he's talking to him changes, and it's all intentional. They keep asking questions. Rickett's got no alibi for the Carrie Lynn Palmer murder. So then this whole line of questioning is bam, bam, bam. "Why weren't you at work? I don't work weekends. You're a trash collector. I work with hazardous materials. What do you drive? I told you I don't own a car. When did your aunt die? A month ago. Do you know Carrie?" "No." "So nobody's going to say they've ever seen you talking to her? Do these pants make my butt look like a juicy peach?" It was just like boom, 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 boom. Stabler wants to know why Rickett's fiance, Vanessa Serafino, broke up with him. He says it was the Jets. And I was like, "No, it was the Sharks." Vanessa Serafino just sounds like a...
"When you're a Jet, you're a Jet." That was, I watched that every fucking weekend. I think I've talked about this.
I think so too.
Yeah. And then how I went to see the play and I cried as soon as they were like.
And your mom was like, "Relax."
Yes. Yeah.
Stabler wants to know why Rickett's fiance, Vanessa Serafino, broke up with him. And Rickett blames Stabler and says it's because he told her Rickett killed Dana McNamara. Stabler calls him out, saying she called off the wedding because Rickett was pretending to be in medical school and is using this shamey, ego-busting tactic of like, "Come on, we both know you were never going to be a doctor. You never finished fucking high school." Mm. Like, lie to your fiance. Don't lie to me. Benson asks him who the woman who visits him at work is, since he says he doesn't have a girlfriend. And he goes, "You're the detective," and looks all satisfied with himself, like Gabe getting someone to say, "What's the matter, baby?" Stabler's asking more about his ex-fiance, Vanessa. "She got a restraining order, changed her name, left town. Did you threaten her? I never talked to that skank again." Benson jumps in, and it's like they're having two separate interrogations, but also one, because Benny's talking to him, and he's talking to her, and Stabler's talking to him, and he's talking to Stabler, and it's all just very quick in this like section of it. It's really well orchestrated, actually. Uh-huh. And she goes, "Hey, you dumb bitch, you said your aunt died a month ago, but you got back 6 months ago." And he's like, "No, you dumb bitch, she was sick. I took care of her." Sid was like, "Oh, like you're a doctor?" And Benny circles back around to, "Why'd you leave California?" They're trying to get in his head.
Right.
He doesn't answer her again. Stabler brings up that Vanessa, Rickett's ex, called off their wedding 2 weeks before Dana was murdered. Okay, on a scale of one to me putting my fist through your teeth, how mad did that make you? And so they're just like bombarding these questions. Benson asks him about being fired 3 weeks ago. He says he wasn't fired. His job was given to one of the boss's mafia buddies. Stabler's confusing me now, because he's like, "Wow, dude, that's bullshit. You got screwed. They treat you like you're nothing. And now you're unemployed?" And Rickett's all, "Yeah, they're nothing. It's goddamn disrespectful is what it is." Stabler's like, "You don't need that." He's hyping now. Rickett stands up, totally fallen into Stabler's trap, or so I thought. "I'm not going to take it anymore. They don't know." The music swells. And Stabler keeps hyping him like they're me and Gabe saying exactly to each other. Mm-hmm. And dude goes, "I'm going to show everybody. I'm going to kill everybody. I'm going to hurt the kids. I'm going to hurt your kids, Stabler, and their pets. I'm going to kill them too. I'm a psycho killer. Ah, what are you going to do about it? Ah."
Yeah.
And Stabler's like, "Yeah." Stabler was yelling along with Rickett, like during this, because he thinks he's got him. He's like, "Carrie Lynn Palmer, how'd you kill her?" Rickett eventually is kind of like, he tapers off, like, "Yeah, oh my God, crazy." And he literally does the tongue out fake choke himself. "Ah, kill the kids." And then he's like giggling a little bit.
Yeah.
Acting. So Stabler's now just staring at the dude, like, "Oh, now I'm a little embarrassed."
Right.
Because he realizes he's fucking with him. Rickett goes back to calling Stabler an animal, a Neanderthal. "You're just like I remember you, except now they send you in with a babysitter." Ooh. He decides to address said babysitter and shows Benny a scar from when he got put through a window the last time Stabler interrogated him. Did I cry about it? Did I sue the city for a handout? No, I'm a man. To me, that statement was giving, I drive a Dodge Stratus.
I hate you both.
Rickett goes on and in Stabler's stink face tells Benson, I didn't tell Stabler what he wanted to hear and he threw a temper tantrum. He's a baby, a stupid, selfish, whiny child. I mean,
yeah.
Is he wrong?
Yeah, he can be right and also still be a terrible person and killer.
Correct. So Stabler mentally regroups and asks them if they want something to eat. He walks out of the room into Cragen's pile of spaghetti. They're both meatballs. Cragen looks concerned. We cut to Stabler calling in this food order, and he's telling the person on the other end to make sure it's something really smelly. Yeah, extra stink cheese and double raw onions.
Extra stink cheese. Make it extra stinky.
You know how I like that stink?
Put a diaper in there. Make sure it's extra dirty.
So Munch is walking by during this call, tells him good luck, and leaves. After Stabler gets off the phone, Cragen comes out and tells him they got to get moving. They're 5 hours into this shit and haven't seemed to make any progress. We got to do more than just get creative with a food order. Stabler brings up Rickett's outburst. Not the fake one, but the one where he was genuinely mad at Stabler after when he calls him a child and whatever. The last thing he said about kids, a.k.a. Stabler, they're greedy, they're out of control, stupid. To Rickett, that's the worst kind of insult. Mm-hmm. Cragen's like, dude, Stabler, he's not gonna confess. But Stabler says he knows Rickett. He gets off on having all this rage, but controlling it. And it builds until he can't control it and takes it out on a young girl. Cragen makes a good point and tells Stabler that it was fucking obvious from the other side of the glass from his bowl of spaghetti that Rickett was in control in that interview room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
He had a full handle on his emotions, but did Stabes? Mm-hmm. Did you, Stabler? Did you have a handle on your emotions? No. No. Cragen sends Stabler back in, telling him to make sure Rickett knows he's not running shit in there. Keep pushing those buttons, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
So beep, beep, beep. Later, it's the middle of the night. It's 12:49 in the morning.
Middle of the night.
Rickett refused to eat his food. And Stabler's new strategy is to get him to confess by way of misophonia. This guy's fucking smacking his mouth so hard, finishing up this sandwich. He's right in Rickett's face talking like Chief Wiggum. He's like, you sure you don't want to eat anything, Gordon? You're going to be in here a long time with us. May as well get a free lunch out of the deal. Oh, God, that was good. Ah. Rickett's physical response to Stabler lets us know the cheese and onions are working.
Yeah.
And Stabler goes back into questioning with this new energy. Hey, buddy, why'd you leave California? Rickett's just like, Jesus Christ. Then Benson calls him on his aunt story. Rickett didn't have an aunt that was alive anyway. Rickett tells her the information that she has is incorrect. Then Toots comes in. Hey, you were going on about being honest and cops are punks. Remember in the holding cell earlier, your monologue? I was the guy in the hoodie. I'm acting. Rickett does not like that Toots did that.
Even though he didn't even say anything.
He didn't like it. Toots tells him that he's lying. You're lying. Remember, we talked earlier and you said you were going to tell the truth. It's about being honest. And now you're not being honest. You should feel bad about it. Toots asks him if he's spoken to his girlfriend in California. You know, the one you didn't tell us about. She told police Rickett tried to rape her 14-year-old daughter, then left town. You ran away like a scared little girl. The only reason he's not getting spanked in California is because the girl won't talk to the cops. Rickett tells them that she had, quote, emotional problems, but they're putting together a pattern in his behavior.
Right.
Rickett was evicted a week and a half before he tried to rape his ex's daughter. He murdered Dana McNamara after his fiance left him and Carrie Lynn Palmer after he got fired. Benson asks him to tell them about Arizona and Nevada. Like every time some big thing that he doesn't have control over happens, he commits a horrible, awful crime.
Mm-hmm.
Stabler tells him they know about Carson, Nevada. A girl named Chloe Lynch went missing, and Rickett was questioned at that time. In Arizona, Heather Morrison was another little girl who went missing. Rickett was questioned and released for lack of evidence. Stabler gets real close to his face, finds the perfect light, and gives a little speech. He says to him, he hot breath, hot double onion, stink cheese breath, whisper breathes in his mouth and says, "I've been dreaming about this. Catching you and all your lies and you tripping over your mistakes. Your biggest one was coming back to New York. You haven't forgotten me. I haven't forgotten you either. Stay out of Malibu, Lebowski." I don't know. He's, keep your gold bricking ass out of. So he's like, "It's on now, motherfucker." Like, that's this energy.
Mm-hmm. So cut to a little bit later in the bullpen. Toots is going to the crib for a 30-minute break. Benson is getting a pop from the vending machine. So Stabler comes out and tells her that Rickett is asleep and he's going to wake him up, then let him sleep, wake him up again, and try all to try to disorient him.
Mm-hmm.
Benson tells him to let her know when he wakes up, but Stabler says no, it's nothing personal, but he wants to change shit up. He wants to do the interview alone since Benson got called his, quote, babysitter at the beginning of the interview. He wants to make Rickett think he's going to fucking throw him through a fucking plate glass window again. And then he says, "I know what I'm doing." And I'm like, "Sure, Jan." Benson looks concerned, but says, "Okay," and fucking walks off.
She's like, you get so mad so fast.
Yeah.
Over so much less. And this guy's psychologically your rage equal.
How many times has she like broken up his rage by just saying Elliot and him like shaking out of it? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's why you have a partner.
I was in a blackout.
I was gonna murder that person.
I rage blackout. He legit just a few episodes ago out loud said he almost punched a lady in the face. Like,
he kicked open a door and just shot a fucking gun.
Just shot a person. There could have been nobody there. There could have been a gospel choir there. He had no idea what was behind the door.
Yeah. Cut to a little bit later. Stabler and Toots wake up Rickett by yanking the table out from under him. Whoop, 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 whoop. What would have been cool is if he just stayed like that, like one of those like where you take a tablecloth. And everything still stays there. And he's just, I don't know.
Yeah, that would have been hilarious. They should have added that.
They try to get him to take coffee from them, but he won't. Toots says, "Look at his face. Like, I'm a cheating boyfriend. Don't worry, baby. I'll always love you." Rickett laughs. "You're funny." And Toots says, "Yeah, you're hilarious. Looking all betrayed. We snowed you. Get over it." "I wore a hoodie.
I'm a part of this."
Yeah. Rickett tries some bullshit on Toots, saying he was probably smoking the, quote, pipe. And since Toots came from the bottom and he's here, he should be real proud. Oh, he's like, "Look at you. You fucking just kind of racist and fucking weird." Toots is like, "Oh, yeah. You know a lot about being a bastard child from experience." Rickett says, "Well, I know who my daddy is." And Toots says, "I know who mine is, too. But he's stuck around unlike yours." That was like a weird "we don't have dads" thing.
Yeah. It escalated until Toots was like, "You're a little cunt."
Yes. Oh, yeah. Very popular.
You're real popular. My favorite is right after this. They're just like, Toots gets the sarcastic way he says, "It's like he's a reverse psychology evil genius." I laughed really hard.
Stabler tells Rickett that everyone knows everything about him. His psych evil from the last trial 14 years ago, his father abandoned him when he was 18 months. 6 months later, his mom gets pregnant again by, quote, "another man that won't marry her. How's your sister?" Rickett says, "Ask her." And then Toots says, "I did talk to her, and even she thinks you're guilty." Then Stabler goes on to say that Rickett had to grow up and take care of the new baby, and then gets in Rickett's face and screams, "That selfish bitch!" and uses a whiny, like, baby tone. "You ruined my life because you won't take care of me." I'm like, damn. Rickett kind of chuckles and says, "I'm not going to talk to you about my mother." And then Toots jumps in and mockingly, my mother never looked after me. I had no childhood. I'm like, what the fuck? Jeez, that's pretty terrible. Oh, and then Ricketts is like, I never fucking said that shit to the shrink. That wasn't in my psych eval. Sailor's like, yeah, no, that's what the shrink said about you, and starts reading off notes. The eval says that Ricketts had a childlike view of the world and thinks the world conspires against him to keep him from success and happiness in spite of his inflated view of his intelligence. Ooh. And then Sailor goes, she calls you a fucking moron. And Ricketts doesn't give a shit what the shrink says, or that bitch said. But Sailor says, well, it's pretty clear that you do. It's fucking eating you up, brother. Well, if that bitch, the shrink, came into this room right now, you'd fucking want to kill her. And then Sailor gets in his face and calls him a loser and tells him he's nothing. The reason your life sucks is because you've done nothing. Ricketts just kind of laughs it off. I've done nothing, huh? Sailor gets in his face. Besides the little girls you've raped and murdered. Is that what you're saying to me? You want to walk me through that, you piece of garbage? How good you are at torturing children? Tell me how strong you got to be to kill a little girl. What's the problem? A grown woman is too much for you? You got to take it out on little girls? I should put you in pigtails, you little bitch. Come on, you little bitch. I want you to cry for me. Come on, cry for me. And Sailor spits in his face. And Toots gets up.
It turned into the best episode of Flavor of Love. Did you watch Flavor of Love when Pumpkin spits in New York's face? That's all I could see.
I do remember her spitting in her face and immediately turning around and like walking away like really fast. She's like, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that.
And then New York comes after her and just fucking grabs her by the hair and pulls her down. Oh,
yeah.
Not good. Not a good look for, you know, the ladies. But you know what's not a good look is a pile of women competing for the hand of Flavor Flav.
Toots walks up to Stabler to try and pull him off, and then Stabler loses it and pushes Toots off him. Stabler goes back to Ricketts' face and calls him a little bitch. Toots goes behind the glass with Kragan. Kragan wants to know what happens next, but the yelling was the end of the plan. They didn't have anything else after this.
Yeah.
They didn't really have anything.
That was the plan.
Yeah, that whole thing was planned out. Like him freaking out and Toots being like, back off. And he's like, no. Like the whole thing was drama.
Yeah, because before they went in, I mean, he said that he wanted him to feel like Stabler was getting out of control.
Right.
But the best is when Toots walks out of the room, Kragan's like, what was that about? And Toots is like, nothing. Like a fucking teenager.
He's like, nothing.
I wear hoodies up all the time now, so nothing. God, Dad.
You fucking skank.
Okay. It's 6 p.m. now. They have been in this interrogation room for hours upon hours upon hours. Ricketts sitting in a chair. Stabler's pacing. It's almost time to release him. Mm-hmm. He starts calling out all the tactics that Stabler's used to get him to break. The light's flickering. My chair's fucked up. Like, what are you doing? It's hot in here. Come on, man. And Stabler pulls out the bottom piece of the chair that he had unscrewed. And he's like, you want this back? You can have it. And at first I was like, is he giving it to him to tempt him to use it as a weapon?
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
Yeah, but we don't see it again. But I was like, I'm pretty sure that's what's happening. He tells Ricketts that, oh, man, this has been tough. You got a lot smarter. And it pains me to admit it. He resets the thermostat back to normal because he had it super hot in there and tells Ricketts how he felt about Dana's case. He knew Ricketts was guilty. Stabler's quiet and calm during this interaction. This is another personality shift that Stabler's doing. He's doing this, like, giving control back to Ricketts moment. Uh-huh. So the quiet calmness is a foreign tactic for our guy, so we haven't seen this before. Stabler goes on about how back then he thought Ricketts was a pedophile. And he says, by definition, sick and twisted as it is, pedophiles think that they love children. He tells Ricketts how you get a pedophile to confess. You just give them the opportunity. They usually feel guilty and want to get it off their chest. But Stabler tells Ricketts that he knows Ricketts doesn't like the kids. He hates them. It's not about attraction or power or dominance. It's about annihilation. Mm. He hurts them because they have what he'll never have. Hope, trust, potential.
Jesus Christ. Jesus.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
Yeah. Stabler goes on bringing up Ricketts' rage, and the swelly music that's usually violins is this fucking eerie piccolo, and I love it. It's like,
oh, I didn't catch it.
Stabler tells Ricketts he's really good at hiding it, but even when Ricketts seems calm, Stabler can see his rage.
Spot it if you got it.
Ah. And even though he thinks he's in control, his rage is actually controlling him. The lies you tell to cover your inadequacies, the perceived insults you think are directed at you, just feeds it. And Rickett basically just mirrors Stabes and tells him, "You don't know anything about control. You're lecturing me about rage? That's Bananarama, dude.
That's rich. That is rich.
Rich. That is Richie Rich, starring Macaulay Culkin. That is...
Ooh, that's fresh. That shit's fresh.
Samesies. Samesies." Stabler responds to Rickett, and he's like, "I don't murder people." And Rickett goes, "Just give it time." And goes on to do the same shit to Stabler and call him the fuck out. "You're fucking controlled, dude. You are. By your boss, your job, your wife and kids. What would you be if they all went away?" And the zoom lens is inside Stabler's nostril as he whispers, "I'd be you." You hear the door open. It's just the zoom is on the tips of their noses, which are touching each other. They're holding a post-it note between their noses together.
Telling secrets to each other, into each other's mouths.
They're like, "Should we play Suck and Blow? Do you have a credit card?" So we hear the door open and Cragen's voice says it's time to let Rickett go. And he gets up and leaves, and Stabler's left sitting there staring off, reassessing the entirety of who he is. The next day, the squad's reviewing the case. Cragen says, "I know we're all bummed about this hump being back on the street again.
First hump of season 6, I think."
Is it?
I think it is.
No. I don't think it can't be. It's episode 17. They've humped earlier.
I don't think they humped at all.
They did. They did.
Nobody's humping.
They've definitely humped earlier in season 6, I'm sure. So yeah, Cragen's like, "I know we're all bummed about this shit. We need to find the link between Rickett and Carrie Lynn Palmer." Benson seems annoyed with Stabler when he shows up. Everybody's sitting around trying to figure shit out, right? And Stabes just walks in and goes, "I want to go over everything Rickett said during the interview process." And she's sitting on her desk and goes, "That's what we've been doing, Elliot.
He moved away from California because it was hot. That's all we talked about.
And then you pounded onions and you yelled in each other's faces a bunch. That was the entire 24 hours yesterday." Well, with Dana's case, Rickett got a lawyer right away. This time he didn't. And Munch points out that he lied about everything. Stabler must have got a great night's sleep. He is all bright-eyed, grabs the big board and a dry erase marker and says, "Not everything." Okay. Toots backs up Munch and says Rickett couldn't even tell the truth about something as simple as what he does for work. He said he works with hazardous materials, but he's a garbage man. And Stabes wants to dive into that. Okay, this is where they need Huang, because Huang would have figured this out while the guy was still in the interrogation room. But instead, Stabler is doing it after the fact. It's fine. We figure it out. So Stabes is like, okay, why would he lie about that? Nobody knows why liars lie. Yes, we do. Benson thinks that it has to do with the same reason he lied about being in med school. He wanted to make himself look better. So Stabler writes it down. He labels it as a vanity lie. He also lied about leaving California, saying it was too hot. But it's really because of the sexual assault of a 14-year-old. And then Cragen brings up lying about not having a car or access to a car. But how else would he have dumped Carrie Lynn's body? Mm-hmm. Stabler labels these as guilt lies.
Okay.
Which I didn't fully get, but we're on a roll, so we're going to keep it moving.
I don't either.
Benson wonders why he's lying about having a girlfriend, thinking that he would want them to know about it because of ego and to prove, heavy quotes, that he doesn't need to rape little girls, even though we know that that's not what that's about. But sometimes that's why fucking pedophiles and shit have a cover like a wife and whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
Stabler asks if they got the LUDs on his phone, but Cragen says they're still waiting. Stabes thinks it's possible he's hiding the girlfriend because he maybe told her shit that he doesn't want repeated. Stabler's got a little sand in his craw. He's like, hey, I gotta know why he's lying about this aunt. We gotta get those LUDs. They may be able to make the girlfriend and the aunt lies make sense. So he's got girlfriend and aunt on the board as well, but we don't have a category for those lies. And Cragen's like, good fucking job, dude. I bet this is going to help us figure it out at this point in the episode.
He's like, all of this should have been done yesterday.
This would be great if this had been done already. Maybe the next kid isn't going to be wildly traumatized. Oh, we'll get there.
So Betty and Stabes knock on the door of Linda Cusick's apartment. Cusick?
I don't know.
Who cares? Who cares?
I don't care.
Benny and Stabes knock on Linda's door. She answers. They want to ask her about her boyfriend, Gordon, a.k.a. Gordon Rickett. She kind of starts to say no, and fucking Stabler grabs her arm and pushes her back into the apartment. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure you can't do that. I'm pretty sure you can't.
She was, if she looks familiar, it's because she was in an episode in season 4. Mm. She was also in 4 episodes of The Sopranos, but anyway.
Rickett didn't warn her that they'd be paying her a visit, but he did tell her about how they framed him years ago. She says they broke up weeks ago. Benson tells her that she knows she calls him twice a day every day. That doesn't mean they didn't break up, case in point, me. Stabler tells her to stop lying because he ain't in the mood. She tells him that they've been dating for about 2 months. She didn't see or speak to him during the times that Carrie Lynn was killed. And she says that Rickett doesn't have any family that she knows of. And she doesn't have a car that he could have used to dump the body because she lives in New York City. She's never seen him driving and doesn't know if he ever borrowed anyone's car. They've been hanging out for like 2 months. Benson asks her if Rickett ever made her dress up or act like a little girl. And Linda doesn't answer, but by her like weirded out face, it's a fucking total yes.
It is.
Stabler finds a box from Linda's job and he's like, what the fuck is this? It's a salon located 2 blocks from Carrie Lynn's apartment. Two blocks. Yeah. Benny and Stabler are at the salon now and they show the owner a picture of Carrie Lynn and he's never seen her before. He also says that he knows Rickett is a thug, but only because all of Linda's boyfriends are thugs. Then he tells Benny and Stabes that his salon was recently robbed and his car got stolen. It was found on fire in Staten Island, which is where Carrie Lynn's body was found. Take me back to the Old Town Road.
They head over to Old Town Road, where CSU and SVU examine where this car was dumped. CSU Judy says that the car burned hot and for a long time, which means accelerant was used. So the trace evidence was probably gone. They have to search through all the stuff at the dump site, which just looks like a lot full of garbage to begin with. Mm-hmm. Lot full of garbage. That was my nickname in high school. The site is a mile from where Dana was found 14 years ago. Benson wonders why he's so comfortable in that area. What is his connection to Staten Island? Stabler's like, he knows it. There's a nursing home across the street. Stabler brings up the comment Rickett made about not being willing to put his aunt in one. That's why he came back to take care of her. He wasn't about to put her in a nursing home.
Dude, you wouldn't fucking dump a car across the street from a nursing home where you know people. Come on, man.
Right.
That's
I know.
Stupid.
Right.
That's fucking stupid.
But this is this universe and we are detectiving now, honey. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he took it to a dump site across the street of a building with windows as a person that they know by name.
And like the nurse and people would be able to ID him if they stepped outside.
Right.
But that's a stretch because I mean, otherwise, why would they go to a nursing home unless they saw it across the street? There was no reason to. So, yeah,
this is as plausible as a AAA baseball player digging up a baseball diamond with an excavator in the middle of town.
Right. Unless that wasn't the actual fucking nursing home. He just saw it and was like, we need to check nursing home. Oh, no.
No, he it's.
Yeah, because he's comfortable with the area. So.
But maybe it is a different nursing home. Maybe it just happened to be another nursing home across the street. Whatever. Who cares?
Well, but they said that he was comfortable in the area and then saw the nursing home. Anyways, yeah.
So at this nursing home, maybe a different nursing home, whatever nursing home they go to, Benny and Stabes are walking and talking with a nurse who's played by a pretty awesome actor. She's Miss Rosa in Orange is the New Black. Do you remember? Okay. Mm-mm. Miss Rosa was an inmate who had cancer and she was getting cancer treatments and stuff. She didn't have any hair and whatever. And there's the one where the one bad lady comes and then she escapes. And then Rosa, spoiler alert, runs her down with a fucking prison van.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's right. I remember her. I remember this. Yeah.
She's also in Veep, Girls, House of Cards, Better Call Saul. She'll be back in season 10. She's great. Anyway, she tells the detectives that Rickett doesn't have a blood relative there, but he visits Mrs. Larson, who grew up with Rickett's mom in Illinois. This nurse wants to know if he's in trouble. And Stabes goes, you could say that. But she wants to make sure she protects her patients. That's why she's asking. She's like, I'm not covering for him. I'm protecting the people that I care for here. Mm-hmm. Again, Rickett doesn't have a dead aunt. Mrs. Larson has been paralyzed for 20 years. She's just in a wheelchair, but is still healthy as a math horse.
I can't pick up the type of speed from this. It's the room's too small.
Benson and Stabler go talk to Mrs. Larson. Bloop, bloop.
We love her.
Clip, clop, clip, clop. We love her. She's adorable. Oh,
yeah.
It cuts to her and she's like, well, I'm certainly a popular girl these days.
Yeah.
Because Rickett has been there to see her. She thought he'd been in India for Doctors Without Borders. So she was kind of bragging about it a little bit. Like, well, he hasn't been around because, you know, he's with Doctors Without Borders. And something wonderful. And she goes on just adoring him and says since he's been back, he's paid her bills and takes care of everything at her house. He does general maintenance, gardening. He just bought new storm windows. So when she's ready to get out of the nursing home, she's going to have everything all set up for her. Stabler asks her where her house is.
And I was like, who is she to him?
She grew up with his mom.
Oh, that's
so
right.
So it was probably one of those auntie but not auntie situations.
Totally. Yeah. That's right. Benny and Stabes walk up to Mrs. Larson's house. Stabe points out that the car in the driveway doesn't look like it's seen the road since, I don't know, 14 months ago, around the time Dana McNamara's murder. Benson bets her fucking DNA is still in there. They go into the house. It's unlocked. It's cold. The place is a mess, and there are final notices piled up everywhere. There's like nothing in there, pretty much. It looks like Rickett's been robbing sweet little Mrs. Larson, and it's cold because he hasn't paid any of the bills and shit except for electricity.
There's no more disgusting human.
I know.
Than someone who, well, yeah. No, I should say the umbrella of it is to go after vulnerable communities. Mm-hmm. But when people fuck with elderly people, it is so fucked up. Jen Shah.
Who's that?
It's Real Housewives.
Oh.
She was Real Housewives. I'm going to give you like the 10 second. Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. She got busted for defrauding elderly people and like stealing their identities and shit. And she's in prison now. She's in federal prison. It was legit an episode. They were about to go on a trip and she got a phone call and she's like, I got to go. And the fucking real ass FBI SWAT team surrounded the vehicle and arrested her.
Holy shit.
On camera.
Crazy. You'd think that if you were doing shit like that, you wouldn't want to be on a TV show. Like, you wouldn't want any attention to yourself, you know?
You would think that, but it's this fucking ego and this...
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah.
We hate what he's doing. They discover that he's not lovely, he's awful, and he's totally fucking this poor little old lady over.
Stabler says Rickett probably didn't sell the house up from underneath her because he needed a place to, quote, work, which is gross. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Larson has been in a wheelchair for 20 years, so they decide to check the basement because you know she hasn't been down there. Mm-hmm. Fucking Stabler finds blood and Carrie Lynn's shoes that she was wearing the day she disappeared. And then all of a sudden upstairs, you can hear the door slam and a girl crying and she's saying, please, I want my mom. Fucking Benny and Staves run upstairs and you see that Rickett brought a fucking like teenage girl home. Yeah. She is upset and he tells her to shut up and shoves her on the couch.
And she is upset.
She is not happy. Benny and Staves are like, fucking, hey, you know, and they hold him at gunpoint.
Yeah.
Fucking, hey, dude.
Hey.
Hey, guy.
Ugh.
Hey, guy.
Again.
Quit. Quit that.
Told ya.
Come on.
We knew it.
Get out of here with that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And Rickett grabs the girl and uses her as a human shield. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh shit. Benny tells him that there's no way out of this and to let the girl go. Stabler tells him that he'll kill him if he doesn't let her go. And Rickett tells him to fucking do it. Stabler says, I swear to God, I will kill you. And Benny shoots him like a side eye. And Rickett says, that's what you wanted all these years, isn't it? And then lifts his head up so he's got a better shot and says, go ahead, huh? Just as Stabler was fucking gearing up to pull the trigger, fucking Benny shoots Rickett in the arm instead. The girl gets out of the way. Benny grabs her. Stabler walks up to Rickett. His gun is still drawn and his hand is shaking because he's gonna fucking do it.
Oh, he wants to kill him so bad.
Yeah. Benson snaps him out of it by telling him, Elliot, it's over. And he's like, I don't know. Oh, yeah, that's right.
I love when you cut into robotic yet human Olivia. Oh. Elliot.
Stabler arrests Rickett for mercy. To me, that was my drama. Like, Elliot, it's over. Oh, you're right. It is robot-y.
That one was kind of Moira.
Yeah.
Elliot, don't do this. You're better than that.
So Stabler arrests Rickett for the murder of Carolyn Palmer and fucking kidnapping because they got this kid here. And then I think Benson shot Stabler the side eye because she knew he would actually kill Rickett. So she shot him in the arm. Which in like the next scene, she actually says that. But I left my note in there because I was like, I am smart.
Really? It's because you never let me have anything.
Yeah.
She's like, I was trying to help you. And he's like, oh, yeah, you knew I wanted to kill him. You knew I wanted to shoot him.
So in the precinct, Stabler sits alone at his desk. Benny comes in and tells Stabes that they got there just in time. Rickett didn't rape the girl he had brought to the house. CSU found two types of blood in the basement. One is recent and one is years old. Stabler asked Benson if she thought he froze when they were at the house with Rickett, like he was ashamed of himself. Are you ashamed I didn't murder that guy?
I'm kind of embarrassed about it.
Yeah. Oh, I feel so weird. He like tucks his hair. He's like one strand of hair behind his ear. He wants to know why she fired first. She tells him that she did it because she knew that Stabler would have killed him. That's what Rickett wanted, for Stabler to always remember that he took his life, not because he had to, but because he was angry, because he had rage. Mm-hmm. Benson asked Stabler if he wants, and then she's like, let's go get some meat, huh? Let's have a nosh.
I love it. Like, yeah, I wrote it out the same exact way. You want to go eat her feelings? Do a little bang bang?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You want to do a bang bang? How about Indian and then some fucking chicken licks, man? Let's do it. And then Sailor's like, you know what? I'm going to go home. It's been a day. It's been a crazy 24 hours. You know? I'm just going to go home.
It's been crazy today.
What a crazy day.
I don't really have an appetite. She's like, yeah, but that girl didn't get sexually assaulted. She just got extremely traumatized.
Oh, yeah.
So, sandwiches?
Sandwiches?
Olive Garden?
All you can eat breadsticks?
Shooter, let's go to Sizzler.
You know what I could use right now? A fucking Bloomin' Onion. I'll tell you that much.
They got that hot dog food truck down the street. All the relish you want, buddy.
I know you got some in your pockets right now.
I set up an inflatable kiddie pool in Craig's office. It's full of relish.
You want to go roll around in it for a little bit? What do you think, bud? You want to go home? Okay, I'll just deflate it. It's fine.
Yeah.
All right. They just leave it there for like 3 days and people just scoop up relish as they need it because they don't want to waste it. Okay. Mm. Later, Stabler's at his locker. He sees his reflection in the mirror and gets angry and starts punching his locker, you know, because he's a tough guy. He's a real tough guy.
Super tough.
And then he stops and his knuckles are bloody and he like cradles his head in his hands. And I wrote, bro, get help. Get help. Get therapy.
Get therapy.
For your kids, if anything. I mean, it should always be for yourself, but it'll help. Anyways, Toyota.
He did it. If you're picturing it, he did it just like Rocky in the meatpacking plant on that side of beef, the way he like yeah. went to town. He's like, like he was hitting his locker and his locker had ribs. Like, don't let him breathe.
His locker's like, my kidneys. Yeah, so Toyota.
Toyota. On the evening of November 20th, 1978, Mary Gallagher, the oldest of six, left her family home in North Glasgow to head over to a friend's house. She kissed everyone goodbye and said she wouldn't be late. Just a few hours later, Mary's half-clothed body was found at a railway station. She had been raped and strangled with the leg of her own pants before her throat was slit. A huge hunt for the killer ensued. Every local man with any whiff of a past was interviewed. Hundreds of sex offenders and anyone with violence against women on their record were eliminated one by one.
Mm-hmm.
Mary's bag was found a week later, but gave no clues. The case eventually dwindled, and when all leads dried up, it went cold.
Mm.
But they preserved a bunch of stuff, including semen taken off of Mary. 19 years later, in 1997, Mary's case would be reopened so investigators could utilize the newest forensic technology.
Oh my God.
DNA, baby.
Yeah.
So it was probably like a cold case team. When the results were run through the database, a name came up. 54-year-old Angus Sinclair. He had never been on the radar for this crime, but was already in prison in 1997, serving a life sentence. I'll tell you why he was there in a second. But before Mary was murdered, he had already served 6 years for raping and strangling his 7-year-old neighbor, Catherine Rehill.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Mm-hmm. He had 6 years for that. When he had been looked into during the original investigation, Mary's investigation, in 1978, mm-hmm. detectives didn't suspect him for the death of Mary Gallagher because she was so much older than little Catherine. But Mary was 4'11", really small. He most likely thought she was younger than she was. Not that that, you know, it's just he fell off the radar because they didn't put together that her age didn't fit his MO. And they didn't put that together. That was a thing that they missed. His life sentence was implemented in 1982 when he stood trial for the sexual assault of 11 young girls between the ages of 6 and 14 years old. He had raped three of them. At the time, Sinclair was the fourth person in Scotland's history to be sentenced to life without the possibility of release. I mean, every psychiatrist that had evaluated him since his first crime had said the same shit. He was sex obsessed. He would definitely be a repeat offender. The only way he could be in society is by chemical castration. Everybody was saying the same exact shit. So this judge forewent all of that and said this, quote, "I have considered very carefully whether a limit should be placed on the extent of that penalty, and I have decided that there is only one limit, namely your life, and you will be imprisoned for life." He stood trial then. So he's already in prison for life.
Okay.
He stood trial again then in 2001 for Mary's murder. The prosecution not only had DNA, they had testimony of Barry McGonigal, a 34-year-old man who, when he was 14, saw Sinclair that night and ID'd him in court. He saw him the night that Mary was killed.
Holy shit.
Can you imagine being 14 and seeing something like that and having to testify like 20 years? I mean, that's just, ugh.
Yeah.
He was found guilty on a majority jury vote, not in the U.S., we're in Scotland, so they don't do the full everybody's got to agree thing.
Oh, it's like a majority. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Judge Lord Carloway said this to Sinclair during sentencing, quote, "This crime was a callous, brutal, and depraved act on a young girl for which there is only one sentence which I'm allowed to pass in law, and that is one of imprisonment for life."
Mm-hmm.
But there was more around this guy. In 2004, Operation Trinity began, okay? This was a nationwide investigation to connect Sinclair to other murders he was suspected of. The shit just kept unfolding.
Hmm.
They believed that in the second half of 1977, before Mary was killed, he killed at least five women. Every one of these women had been found tied up and gagged after a night out. Anna Kennedy, 20, Hilda McCauley, 36, Agnes Cooney, 23, and 17-year-old friends Helen Scott and Christine Eady. After the investigation, Sinclair was charged with Helen and Christine's murders, but was later cleared by a judge who ruled there wasn't enough evidence to convict him. But then, in 2014, he was retried for the same crime. But Tasha, you say, that's Double Jeopardy starring Ashley Judd, you say. Yeah.
I love that movie.
I know. Well, in 2011, Scottish Parliament passed the Double Jeopardy Act that included exceptions to the rule.
Ooh.
Like in the US, Double Jeopardy is absolute. But in Scotland, if somebody admits to it after the fact or more shit comes to light that couldn't have been known prior.
DNA. Yeah.
Yeah. The exact thing that we're like, why can't they? Oh, this is bullshit.
Like that.
Yeah. An acquitted person can be retried. If these things are like, what's his fucking nuts from a few episodes ago coming out of court and being like, yeah, I killed that kid on purpose. Peace out. Double jeps. Bye.
Yeah.
But not in Scotland. Mm-mm. Sinclair was the first to have this happen.
I'm going to have to think about this Double Jeopardy thing and see which one I'm going to think about it.
What do you mean see which one?
Well, because there's like good and bad each side.
Because if somebody's acquitted, they can never really rest easy.
Yes. That and like, you know, our country is all about like, oh, the government, even though we're like cucks for them. So I don't know. I'll have to sort it out. I'll sort it out. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Well, you figure out if we're going to move forward on that in our country or not.
Yeah, I'll figure it out.
I think it's amazing. And I'm sure it's like fucking pulling teeth, just like any other acquit situation, like filing for acquittals. It's really hard to have that process go through. So I doubt it's anything they do flippantly. Like, oh, holy shit. Did he say this to you?
Oof.
Back in court, you know? So Sinclair was the first person to be retried on this adjustment of the law after trace DNA evidence was found on Helen's coat. Okay, remember, Helen was one of the 17-year-old girls that was murdered. This time he was convicted and they tacked on another life sentence. I mean, this at this point, it was people getting whatever closure can come.
Okay, yeah.
And most recent update, Sinclair died in prison in 2019.
Good. Oh,
good. Goodbye.
How old was he?
Well, he was arrested in 1997 at 54. So 1997, 2019, 22 years later, he was 76.
How old was he in 1978? What did you say?
He was 54 in 1997.
Okay.
He had three apples. He gave me 1.25 apples. And
you just cut out. You were frozen, so I couldn't hear. I thought you said 54 and 78. And I was like, what? Mm. What?
So yeah, he was 76.
Mm.
And that's it.
April 9th will be season 6, episode 18, Pure, right?
Yeah, we're going to have just a little spring break.
Yeah. So, and it's, yeah, a virgin. I hated even typing that out. A virgin goes missing and is found dead. There's a psychic, Martin Short. I'm excited.
Ooh, yeah.
And then it reminded me of that great show I loved with Patricia Arquette. I think it was called Medium. Remember? It was so good.
Oh, I never watched that show.
Oof, so good. And her husband was amazing in it. I mean, her fake husband. Her, like, yeah. character. All right. Rate and review us. Email us at svupod@gmail.com. If you want to send us anything, mail it to P.O. Box 176, DeForest, Wisconsin, 53532. Our social media handle on everything is at svupod. Do we say handle anymore? I don't know.
Our CB handle is Eagle Scout 214, but that's... right. We couldn't get svupod for that.
Yeah. If you want pod merch, go to svupod.com or TeePublic. We get Facebook groups, SVU Pod Elite Squad on Facebook, and a Facebook group chat called Walk and Talk. There's an offshoot Facebook group, Single Tomato Book Club, hashtag Little Bit Loud for Indie Pods. If you want to find them, if you are an Indie Pod, and tag that so people can find you. Our Patreon is www.patreon.com/SVU Pod. And call and leave us a message, ghost story, personal stuff, advice, anything at 1-920-345-7005. Again, 1-920-345-7005. You can also text. And love you, bye.
Okay, love you, bye. Rickert's.
Rickert. Rickert.
Rick. Rick, Rick, Rickert.
Rick, Rickert, yeah. Betty and Staves are walking up to Mrs. Larson's house, and Staves points out that the car in the driveway... Driveway?
Stablo points out that the cow in the driveway looks like it hasn't been driven, and they're like, oh, we got him now, Olivia. Will you change my diaper?
I don't have any mummy. Okay, to our Elite Squad patrons, Nikki M., Marissa M., Rebecca D., Alki H., Trisha S., Emily T., Katerina G., Mary D., Joshua H., Lem, Sonia W., Eliza W., Nikki B., Kaylin B., Melanie G., Andrew,
Miranda B., Lauren T., Katie A., Kate H., Vanessa, Lex, Shelby K., Mallory G., Bonita R., Marin,
Courtney W., Ursula, Catherine M., Kate P., Jessica S., Danielle W., Jana M., Tammy J., Bear, Sam D., Nisha G., Nada M., Mac Attack,
Meg M., Casey, Abby W., Alexis J., Caitlin S., Christina D., Camille Z., Maggie D., San, Jessica P., Zahn and J., Madison H., Emily O., Victoria, Scout G. Oh, you thought I wasn't going to say something? Oh.
You got me so hard with that. That was awesome.
I know. Thank you. Oh. I thought of it in the shower this morning, and I was so excited.
Did you know I was going to be like, whoa?
Yeah. I knew. Okay, where was I? Scouchy. Melissa M., Desiree R., Lexi Y., Drew B.,
Monica K., Katie S., Brenna T., Andrea M., Tosh, Jenna L. H., Andrea H., Nikki R. Ah, look at this. It's Aunt Sarah. Hi.
I think I'd see you here. Especially at an active murder investigation. Aunt Sarah. Katie H., Vern, Catherine B., Ariana, Madeline K., Mallory J., Kristen F., Samara B., Dim Sam, Alice D., and Amanda P.
You guys, thank you.
Thanks, guys. Whee!